Now, legendary footballer and without doubt Luton Town's best known player of all time for 13 years, capped by England. His autobiography, it's entertaining. Also a sobering story of a black footballer and coach making his way in the game. It's called Love of the Game. The excellent Ricky Hill is on the line right now. Morning, Ricky.
Good morning, Paul.
Listen, great.
How are you?
I'm very well. Great to have you on. Congratulations on the book. I mean, what was it like to go through? I know you worked with our great friend Adrian Durham on this, but was it a little emotional roller coaster from what I've been reading? You know, there's some very happy stuff and also stuff that's going to make you really angry if you read it as well.
I'm pleased that you said that, Paul. No, from my perspective, it was just a question of telling my truth.
Yeah,
and the reality that I experienced, and obviously I started writing it about 3 years ago, but I've known AD for probably 11, 12 years.
Sure.
And you know, him and I were just conversing. I said, "Listen, I'm about to start to do this thing, and I've jotted down some stuff." And he said, "Well, I can help you do it." So I thought, "Well, who better? You know, Adrian's been a close friend,
sure,
and a good man, and a great journalist." So from my perspective, that was the best way to move forward. Having said that, I still had to kind of, you know, get everything out of me in respects to the journey, particularly the 4 months at Luton was probably the one that actually I felt I needed to not exercise, but just get some clarity as to what took place during that period.
Well, from what place did you write the book in the first place, Ricky? What was it a matter of thinking, you know, I've had a great career and I meet so many fans and people that still talk about it and maybe it'd be good to put it on there? Or was it from a place of everything with, well, I know with you're involved with the UK Rooney Rule and we'll get into that in just a second. Is it something, think, I really need to get this story out there? There's a lot of words I want to say and people should know about what's going on.
I guess it's a little bit of everything, but yeah, at the same time, I think one of the major pushes towards doing it was when my close friend Cyril Regis passed away 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was in Chicago and I was coaching at Evolution Soccer in Chicago. And I just got a phone call in the middle of the night from Jason Roberts's uncle, Otis. And he said, "Big C's no longer here." And I said, "What do you mean?"
Yeah.
He really had an accident and he's passed away. And I, you know, I cried myself back to sleep that night. And I thought, well, gee, you know, we're so fallible whereby anything can happen at any given time. And from my perspective, I'd like to leave some kind of documentation on the journey, the struggle, not just for me, but for a lot of black players from my era and before my era, then leading into post your career, the struggle still continues.
Well, you and Cyril, I mean, it's pretty much hand in hand, wasn't it, back in the days in the 70s when you started coming through. And the things you had to experience, I think a lot of people are more aware now of what young black players had to put up with. I say more aware now, they're hearing the story, but obviously it was around everywhere. It was relentless. And the strength and character that you had to have to go through it must have been incredible there, Ricky.
To be honest, Paul, it was part of the industry. I think it was part of the job. And you know, you didn't know before you got into the game because you fell in love with the game like everyone else does.
Sure.
Because it's a beautiful game. You watch it on TV, you're not aware of any kind of issues and barriers that will prevent you in it, as opposed to anyone else, from succeeding in the game until you get into the system and then you realize it's really tribal. And I guess England at the time and the UK and certain parts of the world was very, very hostile in respect to the race inequalities that was going on. And as we see, inequalities are still going on today, Paul. So from that angle, yes, we wanted to play. That was a drive. That was our passion. But we were also singled out because we were of a minority. And whether that's one of us or two of us or three of us. And if the opposition fans can, yeah, weaken our resolve and get their team to be playing against 9 men or 10 men or 8 men, if we were put off of our game,
yeah,
that's how they would win. So for me, I experienced, you know, a terrible situation in my first away game, and where the whole crowd, three quarters of the crowd, I should say, were singing songs about me and making up different songs about
yeah
me, and, you know, using the N word and, you know, the C word and whatever else. But I saw the sadness in my teammates' faces and I thought, oh, I'm here to play the game and I'm good at this. And, you know, let me just try to turn it onto them in regards to using their negativity to fuel my ambition and my passion.
I've got to say, there's one thing, and maybe I'm naive in this, and there's probably quite a few of us that are, and when I was reading the book, is that you're dealing with coaches that would say, I mean, from the you know, the silky midfield skills that Ricky, that I'm sure you still got to this day, that people were saying to you that, well, this is not the right position. You shouldn't be playing in this position in the team. You know, it's not a midfield, you know, ball player is not what a young black person would do. It's unbelievable. I had no idea that this happened.
Yes, I mean, there were so many stereotypes against black players prior to then breaking through into the system. As you say, you know, Luther Blissett, Sir Regis Brownstein and myself all came from Brent. You know, we are Brent raised, schooled, played against each other, very really played with each other because we went to different schools, but we knew each other. And none of us were conventionally part of the football establishment, schoolboys, training and various things, signed to associated schoolboy forms, and then into professional game. We all had to kind of circumvent that and find a way into the system. Mm. And part of the reason was because there was these stereotypes and falsehoods and misconceptions that black people didn't like the cold weather, couldn't hit the ball, were volatile characters, you know, didn't have the intelligence to play in certain positions. And I've written a piece in the book whereby, you know, John Fashanu, you know, rest in peace.
Justin, not John.
Justin wrote a piece for the Shoot magazine, and he kind of just endorsed those statements that were made 10 years ago about certain things, because whether he was conditioned by it or whether the ghostwriter had written it in this manner, but
this was 1983, wasn't it? So it's not that
correct,
long.
Paul. That was not that long ago, but just go back another 10 years into 1973. And that was the time, I believe, West Ham had three black players, the first team in England to field three black players in an official league match. So I grew up seeing magnificent players from my borough, never going for trials, never being invited for trials. Mm. And then how am I going to get through? And that was the issue. And to me, I was grateful I got the opportunity. I managed to take it and move forward. But those stereotypes that were there, now moving on another 30 years, they've been allowed still to pervade and to permeate throughout the system, but now not from the playing perspective.
Coaching,
but from the coaching and managerial perspective, because we have no former track record or long history as coaches.
Now, I tell you, there's so much I could cover with you, Ricky, and talking about that. I know it's all in the book, and the Luton experience as well, is when you've gone back to run the club, and that just didn't go the way it should have done. But with all of this, everything we talk about, there is still a great love of the game, because that's the name of the book, isn't it?
Without a doubt. And I chose the name. We went through a number of names of what it could have been. I made my debut as an apprentice still, and in 22 minutes, I made a goal and scored a goal.
Yeah.
And that's how I introduced myself to the fans and to the world.
22 minutes that changed your life. God.
Correct. I could have said that. But then I thought, well, no. Before the game, I fell in love with the game just by a vision, just by seeing someone that looked like me in a white kit. Playing for Leeds United against Liverpool. And I didn't even know who the teams were, but it was Albert Johansson, and he thought, that's me. And I transported myself into his body. That fueled the passion, ignited the flame. And from there, I kind of used that to say, I want to be like him. But then post that, I've still managed to eke a career as a coach somehow, throughout the last 30 years. And England hasn't been that embracive of me in respects to giving me opportunities, but I've still managed to continue to struggle against the odds, so to speak, gone to the United States on numerous occasions. And, you know, to be, I think, honest, Paul, I am the most successful black soccer coach, professional soccer coach in the United States history.
Yeah. Ricky, look, it's really good to speak to you. I'm sorry we haven't got time for any more, but it's a terrific read. It's called Love of the Game. It's eye-opening. It's entertaining. It's got everything in it, and congrats on it, and the best of luck, and it's really good to speak to you. So thanks for your time.
Thank you, Paul. Really
good to speak to you. Thank you very much. Ricky Hill there. Give it a go. It's called Love of the Game.